Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
The play Morning Sun is deeply rooted in New York City, but the set looks like it could be a church basement just about anywhere. It's got a small kitchen, a beat-up armchair, an upright piano, and plenty of folding chairs, and that's about it. The three women who populate this set are existing in a space somewhere between life and death, able to speak to each other even as decades pass and death separates them. The eldest is Claudette, a woman in her 70s, played by Blair Brown. Claudette was the first to establish herself and her family in a rent-controlled walk-up in Greenwich Village. Then there's her granddaughter, Tessa, a young woman struggling to find her path in life and her place in the city. She's played by Marin Ireland. But this is really the story of the woman in the middle, Charlie, Claudette's daughter and Tessa's mother. She's played by Edie Falco. The play begins with Charlie's birth, and from there, the women narrate Charlie's entire life, decades of love, loss, friendship, motherhood, hardships, and successes, up until the moment of her death. To help tell her story, actors Blair and Marin play not just Claudette and Tessa, but also every other character that enters Charlie's story, from her abusive partner to her childhood best friend. And it's a deceptively simple show, just three women talking about their lives, their moments of happiness, their regrets. But the play, written by Simon Stevens and directed by Lila Neugebauer, packs a serious emotional punch. It's also like playing a game of New York bingo. Longtime residents will love hearing the shout-outs to various locations and institutions, St. Vincent's, around the city throughout the show. Morning Sun is running at City Center Stage 1 through December 19th, and we're thrilled to have Marin Ireland, who plays Tessa. Hi, Marin.
Hi.
And Edie Falco plays Charlie. Welcome back to the show, Edie.
Thank you.
So, Marin, I'm sorry I called you Marin. Marin Henkel's an old friend of mine.
Oh my gosh, I love her too. I'm thrilled. Thrilled to be in her shoes.
I'll get it right for the rest of the interview. How would you describe your character in three adjectives?
Well, I think of my character actually as number three, which is how she is in the script.
Right.
So, that's a tough question. I know you just asked me for three adjectives. But because I play so many people, I think three is like, she's omnipotent. She's omnipresent. And she's mischievous. I'll say that.
Edie, how about you?
Oh no, I was afraid you were going to come to me with that. I think Charlie is, she is regular. She is loving. She is confused. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
The word,
or maybe that's me. I don't know.
maybe that's Oops. All of us these days.
TMI.
You know, the word regular is important because these are people living ordinary lives, but all the great things that come with an ordinary life and the hard things that come with an ordinary life. Marin, what do you like about playing someone's life just as it is? It's not extreme.
I think something that we talked about a lot in the world that we're in now, and obviously, you know, we were going to do this play pre-pandemic, and I feel like right now it just hits so different. And one of the reasons it hits different is because, you know, there was this phrase that we've all become so familiar with now about essential workers and people and who is essential. And this thing, especially in terms of Charlie's life, but everyone in the play, that there, the tension between Claudette being a little bit obsessed with wanting everyone to be extraordinary and to do something spectacular and to have this big achievement and not being willing to acknowledge herself that everyone matters, that you are, Charlie is important. She is essential. All of these other people that Charlie brings up in the play, the veterinarians and the housekeepers and the hairdressers and everybody, that everyone is essential and extraordinary and just kind of making it through an entire life. Which is part of why I think the play, it can't have an intermission. You need to have that accumulation of everything. It's a huge achievement that we all have a different sense of that at this point, I think, in the world, that it's just getting through life in any stretch of it that we are lucky enough to have is enormous and worthy of celebrating, as opposed to only doing plays or movies about people who, you know, the first person to do this or the person who invented that or whatever. It's, so I think it's incredibly beautiful, and it feels like it's honoring everyone in the audience who's ever felt like they weren't enough.
Edie, the play is full of monologues. You have a lot of them. We were lucky enough to get some audio of one. We're going to play. This is a scene from the play where Charlie is describing a first date with a new boyfriend. This is from Morning Sun.
Do you ever have one of those dates where you can't stop talking? I sometimes wonder if it's because the other person, the person that you're on the date with, doesn't take the opportunity to speak when you offer them the opportunity, like you suggest a given pause in the natural flow of the conversation. It could be that. Or it could be that you're just so nervous and anxious, uncertain about yourself, and I am an anxious person, that you don't want to let them talk in case they say something that will disappoint you. I put on my yellow blouse and my blue denim skirt. And he takes me to a place called Frankie's on Lexington and 65th. The tomato sauce on the meatballs is as fine as I have ever tasted. And as soon as the waiter brings me out a house red, I start talking and I do not stop. And what he does is he listens. He listens to me talk about Casey and about mom and dad and about you, Tessa. He listens to me talk about you, and he, what he does is he listens. He remembers things that I've said. And the astonishing thing is what it feels like to be heard.
That's Edie Falco from Morning Sun. Edie, how do you make listening, because a lot of you do talking, but a lot of listening. You have to listen to each other, and you're all on stage for the entire performance. How do you make listening active as an actor?
How do you mean, like as an actress?
Yeah.
You just have to make it a priority, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly for a lot of actors starting out, you feel like the only way to portray your acting abilities is when you are saying stuff. And I mean, as far as real life is concerned, I think one of the ways you know who you are is by seeing yourself reflected in the people around you. Mm-hmm. Like, are they taking in what you're saying? Is what I am saying that's important to me? Is it important to them, or is it registering that it's important to them? I mean, or is everybody just waiting for an opportunity to say, yeah, but I, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's huge. It's a huge part of interaction between humans. I don't think that answered your question, but
I like the answer.
Came out of my mouth. Okay,
it's just as hard on stage as it is in life sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely right. Absolutely.
It's like it's such a rigorous thing to keep having. It's the rigor of doing the show 8 times a week is to continue to push yourself to listen as if you've never heard it. And it's the same. I feel like it's the same practice in life of being like, wait, just listen to what I'm hearing.
Right.
It's hard. It's hard. Yeah. It's a real practice.
My guests are Edie Falco and Marin Ireland. We're talking about Morning Sun, which is playing at City Stage through December 19th. So Marin, during the play, you transform yourself into these other characters to help tell Charlie's story. We're going to play a clip of you now. Here's a clip of you playing Brian, a museum security guard. Oh, you're making a face.
Wait, listening to your own voice, it's like a nightmare. Go on, though. Yeah, it's going to be great.
Welcome to my world. Okay. All right, we'll get back to focus. Here's a clip of you playing Brian, a museum security guard who Charlie falls in love with.
I can take you to museums.
Museums?
Yes, Mom, museums.
You never went to museums.
Seriously? Where do you think I met Brian?
No, I never wanted to ask if I'm telling you the truth.
I like finding Edward Hopper paintings and thinking, this is where I came from. Morning Sun. I like looking at the strange expression on the woman's face and wondering what she's staring at and if she's thinking about what she's staring at or if her face is kind of frozen because she's gone to somewhere in her head that she can't ever talk about.
I like trying to figure out what that building is.
Excuse me?
I mean, it looks like the top of a tenement building or a factory, but I don't know.
It could be a prison.
That's what I think. It's his wife.
Is it?
Yeah. Joe is her name.
Oh, hey, Joe.
People say she's blind in her right eye, which is why it just kind of hangs there, but I don't know. I think sometimes we all have days like that. Excuse me, I interrupted you. I just noticed you looking at it, and I love that painting.
No, I do too.
I look at it every day.
I guess you would.
I think it was the same floors to watch most days, and mostly you end up in the same rooms. People think we aren't allowed to look at the art. It's like they think we're more, you know, security or something. Which we are, I guess. But when you look at a painting like that every day, I've been doing this job 8 years now, it don't get tired, this picture.
No.
Nope, not for me, it don't. For me, I just see it different every day.
Marin, that wasn't that bad. So, you know, you don't have the benefit of costumes. There's no sort of dramatic way to shift character. How do you do that? Is it voice?
Yeah, I mean, it's very, this play operates in a totally different way than any play I've ever experienced like this. And a big part of it is that, you know, we're all on stage the whole time. There's no hiding anything from the audience. So we were all learning together through the rehearsal process from the play how the machine works. Mm-hmm. And it felt like, okay, well, if they're looking right at me in the transition, then anything I do begins to look like some sort of strange extra, you know, act. And that's not the point. The point is not number three's performance of Brian. The point is telling Charlie her life. So the least amount you can do, the better. And it's, I have to say, every time that I have like a transition into or out of somebody, it's like my actor body wants to hide or do something else. It's like, whoa. And then I just have to kind of go, no, just don't do it. Just, you don't have to do a single thing. Just breathe into it. But it's really wild because there's no, in a lot of other plays, you might, you know, step behind a tree and then come out of somebody, you know, whatever, you go off stage or you get to do whatever, put on a hat and your glasses and your thing and you know, and it's really wild feeling this exposed, which is something that I know we experience anew, me and Blair and Edie, all of us doing this play in this time now. We're very mm-hmm. aware of everybody in their masks, and the space between all of us feels really like it doesn't exist. So there's something that also feels right about that. But it's to do the least amount possible felt like the job. And every so often, like Brian, there are ways that he speaks that, you know, where he's like, it don't feel like this. It don't. So that, to make that feel right in my mouth, there has to be something there, but trying to only just do as much as the play asks and no more. And to make it feel like any extra starts to just feel, the play doesn't, can't support it. It doesn't, you'll get caught. You'll get caught out.
You know, I'm going to ask this question now, and we might not have asked it if we'd had you on the show last week, but there's a moment in the play, Edie, where your character learns that she's pregnant and thinks about getting an abortion. And this is a bit of from the moment. You're walking down Greenwich Avenue. It's a Tuesday morning. It's 7 minutes past 11, and your appointment is at noon. It's a cold day in early February, but the light from the sun up 7th Avenue is completely astonishingly blue. But the sunshine that morning, you stop at the crosswalk at Greenwich and 7th, and you see the sunshine. And I mean, I'm not saying it was the sunshine, but something at that precise moment makes you stop and think and turn around and go back to work. Of course, we're all thinking about the Supreme Court oral arguments yesterday. But Edie, I'm curious what you found powerful about the way this play handles those big kind of issues about abortion, about AIDS, about domestic violence.
Right. It is a completely subjective point of view. This is the story of one woman. This is not the story of all women during this period of time, or it's not her thoughts about her political objectives in doing certain things. It is a completely subjective emotional experience of living a life of a woman. I love that. The play to me does not present any point of view beyond that of this individual. And, you know, even number three saying the sunshine, like, you know, maybe she's thinking, oh, it must have been the sunshine that made, and she's saying, no, I don't even know what it is, or it's not yours to know, or whatever. This is the life of many, 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 many women around the world, and certainly in America, being faced with that, you know, and unfortunately, as things turn out, it is the woman's decision to make, you know. After that night together, the pilot went off back to his life, and she is stuck with the ramifications of it, and they are monstrous. They are huge. Any decision about something like this is huge. And the play presents Charlie's point of view and her emotional response to it.
I think, if I may also, sure, that the fact that it presents it in, like you said, Edie, such a subjective way, I often feel like that is the element that is missing from the larger conversations about these things, is like, yes, but imagine an actual specific person in this circumstance, as opposed to a much bigger sort of idea and concept. And I've always felt that because it's so specific, and because Simon walks that line between there being no judgment on it from the play's point of view, but putting you very specifically in Charlie's mind, that it actually allows everyone that I know, every woman that I know, to enter into all of those moments of the play and be in their own and have their own memories or their own experiences of it, whatever, because it's so specific. And that sometimes can get lost in a much bigger sort of broader conversation. It's like, yes, but then there's that woman and it's 11:07 on a Tuesday. And what do you do?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So much of this play is about being a New Yorker, about having that be part of you. Maren, what does it mean to be a New Yorker to Tessa?
Oh boy, to Tessa. I mean, I do think that Tessa wants, I do think that Tessa really wants to be special. I do think that she has a sense of like the possibility of New York, and that if you're here, you can actually have the life you dreamed of. And I think that she's really stuck in that moment, at least kind of in many of the ways we encounter her kind of as an adult person, is that you should be able to have anything that you dream of. You should be able to go out and find it and get it. And if you're not in New York, if you're in New York and you're not having that experience, you got to figure out how to get it, that there is that tension in a place like this, that if you're already here, you have an apartment, you're already 9 steps ahead of everybody else. You have an affordable apartment. And if you don't feel good or happy in your life, this isn't the kind of town where you just, oh, well, you just stay in your job you don't like for the rest of your life, that this is the kind of town where you got to keep pushing. And that it feels like it's all so close to you. I think that's part of what the tension of the play is, with having sort of regular people being like, yeah, but just being here, you don't need to push past something. You know, there's, I think that it's that tension that she's living in.
How about for Charlie, Edie?
I think she had an artistic soul, you know, like her, that she does what she decides to do with her baby in a stroller is go to a museum. You know, I know a lot of people, young mothers, who that would not be something that would cross their radar, you know. And I think she did. She wanted to sing, and she was so deeply moved by Joni Mitchell and all the things that are mentioned. You know, what does one do with those feelings? Does one be just a partaker of the art in the world, or are you going to spread your own art in the world? You know, I think she had that vibration. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. And also, as you get older, you realize that, you know, other things make you happy. Sure, her job at St. Vincent's was deeply satisfying for her, and it was probably not what you would have thought. You take what's coming at you and you make, you know, lemonade, basically. And I think she ended up with a life that was not, I don't think she begrudged anybody else who would ever reach the heights of artdom, but I think she did have that impetus when she was younger.
The name of the play is Morning Sun. It is playing at City Center Stage 1 through December 19th. My guests have been Edie Falco and Maren Ireland. Thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.